This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
The masters of war pretend not to know that it takes only a moment to destroy.
The Pope saying this morning that he has, quote, no fear of the Trump administration after President Trump went after him.
Workers at the Chicago Department of Aviation drank at bars near O'Hare while on duty, then returned to work.
I'm always going to remain open to transparent and open government.
We have encountered real challenges with cooperation with this office.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. It's time for our weekly news recap. Pope Leo's brother receives a bomb threat at his southwest suburban home. Illinois lawmakers pass legislation limiting junk fees for renters. City Council raises cab fares and advances a proposal banning police from having extremist group ties. Plus, Mayor Johnson's veto holds.
We cannot shift the burden onto labor.
The data shows that this is harming Chicago.
I don't believe it's healthy for us to pit working people against small business owners.
This is just saying a pause, not going back to the $9 figure that was there.
There was not enough votes to put the plan on ice.
Taxi fares in Chicago will soon rise by about 20%.
At the table to help make sense of the week's news was WBEZ's city politics reporter Mariah Wolfel, Talia Soglin, who's a transportation and labor reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and Carrie Shepard, a Chicago reporter for Axios. Mariah started us off with the latest on that controversy over abolishing the tipped minimum wage. Here she is.
The latest is that nothing is changing.
This just in.
It's all staying the same. Tipped workers are set to receive another wage increase in July, and that's after the council failed to override the mayor's veto. Now, the council has been pretty successful as of late in getting a simple majority to kind of go against the mayor. You saw that on a curfew ordinance. You saw that on a measure to ban hemp products throughout the city. But they have not been able to muster that two-thirds majority to override a mayoral veto. So this mayoral veto will stand. The veto was, of course, meant to keep those wage increases in place. The council voted to repeal a 2023 measure that really phased out the so-called sub-minimum wage for tipped workers.
Right.
They did that because they say that restaurants haven't been able to keep up pace and that this has just, you know, taken a huge restaurants, small business, small restaurants have taken a hit. And, you know, the mayor's office kind of disputes that and says there's no data to back up that restaurants are worse off since this policy. So it really tore some of even progressives on the council. You know, Alderwoman Jeanette Taylor spoke out and said, I don't know what to do on this. And that's why during March's vote to repeal the subminimum wage increases, I took a walk. I didn't even vote on it, she said, which is something alders don't usually admit to.
Well, I asked Mayor Johnson about this yesterday. He was on In the Loop for our monthly Ask the Mayor public forum where we took calls. And this time we had a special in-studio audience as well. Here's a little bit of what Johnson had to say on the subminimum wage.
When you're talking about an industry that is overwhelmingly made up of women, and particularly women of color, in the city of Chicago, Chicago Public Schools in particular, where the number of households that are headed by working women, the time in which affordability is the number one issue in America, to cut their wages, it doesn't make any sense.
Talia, quite a few states have passed laws abolishing the subminimum wage for tipped workers, but Chicago is the largest U.S. city to pass this law, right?
Sounds about right. You know, and the Restaurant Association has really lobbied hard against this, the concern being that this is leading to restaurant closures, like I was saying, that they just can't keep up. They're cutting hours. within the industry, there has really long been a real mix of opinions between the servers and the bartenders. You know, there were some people when this was first being talked about, you know, in 2023, who said, oh, this will be really good for me. You know, this will give me more certainty in terms of how much I'm going to be taking home. There were other people who, you know, had really similar concerns to the restaurant association, saying, you know, this is, means people are going to tip less. And there's been a real lack of real good economic data, and both sides have presented data that they say, you know, shows they're right.
And is it still kind of a mixed bag?
Yeah, it's hard to say, and both sides are, you know, pointing to their own data.
What about diners, Carrie? I mean, do you think this legislation could have an impact where it leaves folks feeling confused about whether to tip at all or how much to tip?
Yeah, I think Talia hits it on the head on that, and that diners are, I think, already confused. As you've seen that, like, places like Lula's, other, you know, other restaurants in recent years have added on a bill that, you know, we've already added 20% because we want to pay a living wage to our workers. We want to give them benefits such as health benefits, health care, you know, maternity leave. But, you know, and that leaves people wondering, well, wait, you know, if you ask me, I would say, yes, of course, I want workers, I want servers, I want bartenders to have a living wage, you know, so, but do I tip more? The great divide, I mean, and as is the case in any industry, right? But like with hospitality, you have your servers at Gibson's who are going to walk away with a lot of money every night, no matter what. But then you have your servers at smaller places, I don't know, Uncle Mike's in Westtown in Mariah's neighborhood, who are like, well, wait, how much am I going to leave with today? Right. And so guaranteeing a subminimum wage is, you know, will help with that. I'm older than my fellow panelists here. So I was paid when I was a server $2 an hour, and on tips, you know,
tips are everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was one of Mayor Johnson's legislative victories. He also experienced something political insiders are calling a defeat in the city council. Mariah, I'm talking about the new chair for the powerful zoning committee who was finally named, but it's not who the mayor wanted.
Yeah, I mean, if I put my analysis hat on, I would say this is a defeat as well. I agree. I mean, so Alderman Gilbert Villegas is a frequent mayoral critic. He has led, you know, some of the biggest pushes against Mayor Brandon Johnson, including, you know, the city council taking control of the budget process last year. And he will now lead the powerful zoning committee. Now, the zoning committee oversees everything from, like, major development projects, like approving zoning changes needed for a Chicago casino, to deciding where affordable housing is built in the city of Chicago. And it also plays a major role in whether the city should go along with the controversial topic of aldermanic prerogative, the unwritten rule of aldermanic prerogative. And so the zoning chair is a very important position in the city. Villegas will lead it. This was not Mayor Brandon Johnson's pick, although he has repeatedly said that he's leaving it up to the council.
Right.
Technically, legally, in city ordinance, it is the council's job to approve their own committee chairs, but this is a power that's been, you know, vested in the mayor's office for a long time, although that's been sort of starting to be stripped away, starting with former Mayor Lori Lightfoot. But anyways, Johnson was, and his allies were pushing for Alderman Bennett Lawson, a freshman alderman who was the vice chair of the zoning committee. Bennett Lawson did not get that, and that's, you know, the Black Caucus played a big role in these negotiations too, because Villegas, since he's taking control of the zoning committee, he leaves his current chairmanship vacant, which leaves an open position where a seasoned veteran of the Black Caucus, Derek Curtis, is going to get that role.
I see. And Carrie, I mean, Mariah kind of hit it on the head there about the fact that the mayor is not choosing the committee head.
I mean, and this is a question for Mariah. I don't know how full-throated his endorsement of Bennett Lawson had been, the mayor's. It seemed like it was like sort of he had to remain fairly quiet since Lawson had been in that role, in an interim role. And, you know, to his credit, this is a position he knows about. He used to work for Alderman Tom Tunney, and who used to head the zoning committee. And
Bennett Lawson. Yeah.
Bennett Lawson, correct. And so, has a lot of development in his Lakeview, Wrigleyville area. But, you know, as Mariah says, this is important. I think sometimes we get really in the weeds on the zoning committee, especially because it's historically been this powerful role of Burke and all these, you know, big names in council. But, you know, affordable housing is a huge one for this. You know, both the mayor and all the way up to the governor have said we are really far behind on developing enough housing. We are so short on affordable housing. I have a story about that today in Axios. And, you know, when we don't have somebody to approve these and there's a lot of red tape
and keep things moving,
everything falls behind. And development, it falls behind on all levels.
And that's exactly what's happened here. I mean, there's a major backlog. Mm-hmm. I think Bennett Lawson, to try to force a decision on this, stopped holding meetings earlier this year. You know, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of things that need to be approved through zoning. Vegas says he's going to hold two meetings instead of one before the next full city council meeting. But, you know, it's a defeat for Johnson because, remember, he initially wanted to see Byron Zigcho Lopez in this role, who many see as a divisive alderman in the city council. That did not get enough votes. And so it's been a messy process.
Well, Monday here on In the Loop, I'm going to be sitting down with 36th Ward Alderman Gilbert Villegas. And we'll talk about this new role and his vision. All right. So the city council tackled another issue, this one also affecting wages. They approved the first taxi fare hike in nearly a decade. Mariah, what should we know?
Yeah. It has a few different increases. One, it increases the per mile rate from 25 cents per mile to 31 cents. It increases the so-called, maybe ill-named fee, the vomit fee, from $50 to $100.
Tell us what that is, Mariah.
I don't know. I've never gotten sick in a cab or an Uber or a Lyft. When a customer gets sick and the cab driver needs to clean it up. It also includes a rush hour fee, an overnight fee that starts at 8 p.m. This was a measure that was introduced by Mayor Brandon Johnson. There was only one vote against it, and that was downtown Alderman Brendan Riley. Mm-hmm. He says he voted against it because he's been dismayed by cab drivers who refuse to start the meter, which is apparently a big issue. I mean, I've experienced that, too, where you get in a cab and they try to just charge you a flat rate, thinking you're a tourist and you don't know how.
Oh, I thought it was like a delayed start of the meter.
Or a delayed start of the meter. Either one. And this measure tries to address that by increasing the fine that cab drivers can face for not starting the meter from $100 to $1,000. So it does try to chip away at that. But really, this was a lifeline for an industry that's been battered by.
And as you said, it's something Mayor Johnson wanted. I want to play what he said yesterday on In the Loop about this.
I'm always going to lean in to ensure that the everyday people who make our city great and who help run our city, that they are fully supported. So this is a measure that places our taxi industry in a stronger position to be able to compete with the growing rideshare apparatus in Chicago.
So do you think, Carrie, raising cab fares might cause consumers to not choose
that's,
cabs?
That's actually,
might this work in the opposite
this
direction?
Is my worry. Exactly. This is my concern because cab drivers are so embattled and it is so hard to even find a cab anymore. I mean, I live downtown and it's hard to find one. You have apps now like Curb that you can call one. But I was actually surprised Riley, since he is downtown and that's where a lot of cabs are, in front of the hospital, in front of hotels. But yes, I do worry that. I worry that people are already taking Ubers and Lyfts all the time anyway.
Right.
I mean, and it's such a different, I keep aging myself, but like 20 years ago, you walked on the corner and you could easily get a cab, $5, you know, whatever. Yeah. And it's a different ball game.
The taxi drivers themselves, they've got mixed feelings on this, right? That new reporting from the Sun-Times, I mean, they're thinking the exact same way. We're not going to get customers now.
For sure. And they're already, you know, a medallion and that's a whole nother show of like what that used to be worth and what's it worth now is it's so different.
Talia, lawmakers in Springfield were also trying to navigate their way through legislation that could impact cars and jobs. Get us up to speed on the driverless vehicle bill.
Yeah, so the lawmakers in Springfield are discussing legislation that would legalize self-driving cars, including Waymos, in Illinois. A lot of pilot program talk that could then lead to legalization down the road. People in Chicago may have already seen Waymos on the streets, but they are being driven by people. The company is mapping the streets in anticipation of being able to operate here in the future. They are not allowed to self-drive in Chicago now.
Clearly, Waymo wants to give this legislation the green light. Who's opposing it exactly?
Yeah, so labor has been concerned about this discussion from the beginning. There was a rally down in Springfield. You know, the concern from people like bus drivers, Teamsters is, you know, if we start allowing self-driving vehicles, what does that mean for our jobs? And that's something that's going to have to get addressed. It's kind of the existential question of labor and has been for decades and decades is what do you do when technology threatens your job?
Right. Yeah. So what is the status of the legislation?
It's not clear if it's going to move this session. We'll have to see. I think, you know, there's some understanding that if it doesn't happen now, it's likely to happen in the relatively near term future.
What do you think? Would you get into a driverless taxi? I got to say, I was in Phoenix a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. Did you take one?
They're all over.
Yes.
Every other car Atlanta on too. The highway. Yeah. I mean, but I wanted to. I didn't get a chance to. I really wanted to. And I thought, you know what? Let me shake the scaries a little bit. Let me do it. So I didn't get a chance to do it. And now, of course, it's not yet here in Chicago. But would you? Are you?
I am not. I do not want to.
You're apprehensive a little bit?
I'm apprehensive. I know people love them. I actually asked Waymo if I could ride along with them as their, with the people driving them.
Oh, okay.
And
yes.
Obviously, as I assumed, they said, no, that's a liability issue. But I was like, I just want to see what. But no, I'm a little scared. But yeah, I can see why people love it. They're everywhere. And, you know, Waymo has statistics that they're safer than people-driven cars, right? There are fewer fatal accidents, but I don't know yet.
I've seen people take video from the back seat, and which I don't know if you're fully allowed to do that because I feel like there might be some rules against that.
Yeah.
I've seen folks, you know, post, you know, from other cities, and the Waymos seem to take these sharp turns, and it just it doesn't help with if you stepped in with anxiety. Being in the back when it's like doing its own thing seemingly doesn't help. So I don't know. Good luck. Yeah. Good luck to these people. Mariah, Alders are also considering a ban on Chicago police being able to join extremist groups. I'm talking about groups like the Proud Boys. Give us the status of that ordinance.
Yeah, so that was actually offensively delayed through a parliamentary maneuver at city council.
You sound like a manual. Why did you say that?
You
literally sound like a textbook. A legal document.
The authors of the ordinance, you know, they anticipating, you know, a move from opponents of the ordinance just said, we're going to hold this for this month. We'll bring it up likely next month. And so it's just sitting, but it did pass committee by a 6-3 vote this week as well. And yeah, as you said, this aims to ban police officers from joining groups that are anti-government extremist groups like the Proud Boys, like the Oath Keepers. At least a dozen Chicago police officers have been investigated for their ties to those groups. And it also bans police officers from extremist activities like insurrections, for instance.
How would they identify CPD officers who've got possible extremist ties?
Yeah, the ordinance also grants investigatory power to the Civilian Office of Police Accountability. You know, this, as the name says, the civilian-led agency that investigates allegations against Chicago police officers. And that agency would investigate allegations instead of the city's, instead of the police department's own, you know, Bureau of Internal Affairs. So it's just a bit of a more independent watchdog on these types of allegations. And it would also then, it also empowers, you know, the police department to search for these types of ties in the hiring process as well.
So when do you expect that this is going to come up for a full city council vote?
I would assume next month, unless they're doing the vote counts and they don't have it and then they wait another month, but I would assume in the next month or two.
Now, before we take a pause, the weeks-long debate about whether Chicago Public Schools will be in session on May 1st has been resolved. Chicago Public Schools will be in session for a full day on May 1st. The teachers union wanted classes canceled so that their members and their students could participate in May Day activities. And so instead, May 1st is going to be a civic day of action, and hundreds of students will be able to take a field trip to a pro-labor, anti-President Donald Trump rally. We've got 100 schools that will get transportation to attend. It's a 1 p.m. downtown rally. I mean, everyone's thoughts on how this was resolved, where we landed?
Like it's an excused absence or they'll be in school and then they'll...
It sounds like it. So class is in session. So if you choose to skip all of this, you can go to class.
Oh. But just like a field trip. Like if your parent doesn't sign the field trip permission slip, you stay in class.
You're fine. But, right. You stay in class. But
it was really the teachers union who wanted this day off, so they'll still, so it seems like they're not getting totally what they want because it still has to be an instruction day.
This feels like some kind of compromise.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Interesting. I'd love to see what my kid chooses to do on May 1st.
I think the biggest part of this, it's been, you know, we're very close to May 1st. So if your kid doesn't have to go to school that day, you've got a lot of figuring out to do with not a ton of time. Right. So I think that's been the biggest confusion. And I mean, Mariah was there, but Mayor Johnson, I think, created a little more confusion this week when asked about it. It was like, May 1st is happening. Well, what do we mean? Of course it's happening. Like, what is happening on May 1st? So I just think the confusion has been a big part of it.
I want to dive into that Catholic controversy involving our beloved Southside Pope, Leo XIV. He has been coming under criticism from the president. Yesterday, there was even a bomb threat at his brother's Southwest suburban home in New Lenox. So, Carrie, catch us up on what's been happening here. What's this back and forth?
So the Pope weighed in, which is actually so has Cardinal Blaise Cupich here of the Archdiocese of Chicago, which is actually, when you dig into it, not super controversial in the sense that the Catholic Church really should be against war. And that's what the Pope has been saying. He's been using more extreme rhetoric than that. Cupich, for example, was on 60 Minutes on Sunday and said that there's been this gamification of the war, and that has been an issue. Also, Leo has said he's gone as far as to sort of insinuate there's almost like war crimes going on, which is a big deal. But, you know, and then I think the assumption was this is our first American pope, and this is maybe going to be an ally for, you know, President Trump, and they're going to be on the same page. But to be clear, they have not been on the same page.
No.
You know, Leo has been, as has Cupich, has been very vocal about Trump administration's aggressive deportation campaigns, especially here in Chicago with Operation Midway Blitz. The Pope has always, even that's been part of his ministry, has been about ministry to migrants and has made it very clear that, you know, the church should be a safe place for immigrants and a sanctuary for immigrants, and quite literally used to be before the Trump administration a sanctuary for immigrants. So he has been vocal, and I think if you read between the lines on some of that language before, you would know that he was targeting Trump administration's policies.
Yeah,
but it did ramp up, and part of that was the media ramping up. Part of it was also the president doing a meme, posting a meme of what many assumed was him looking like Jesus, but then he said later he was a doctor.
Yeah,
and then he took it down.
Yes.
I don't know which one is more offensive.
I don't know.
Calling yourself a doctor.
A healer is, I think, what he was saying. But then J.D. Vance's week, who famously is a, you know, fairly recent convert to Catholicism, I believe I'm paraphrasing, he said something like, the Pope should not comment on theology, which seems quite interesting.
Well, on WBEZ's Say More yesterday, we asked callers exactly that. How do you feel about the president and vice president admonishing the Pope? Let's listen.
This is a Republican Party who's perfectly happy to have popes and bishops stand up for them when it comes to abortion. But all of a sudden now J.D. Vance is going to go up in public and say the Pope needs to be careful.
The fact that Pope Leo is from the South Side just makes me burst with pride. The Republicans like to say, stay in your lane. That is exactly what they should do.
This is what the church is supposed to do. It's supposed to stand up for the weak, for the underdog.
People who might have grown accustomed to turning a blind eye only now feel like there's a personal attack against them when there is a spat with the Pope.
Yeah, people were fired up yesterday.
Yeah, those are great calls.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that the caller said this is exactly what the church should be commenting on was quite interesting. Those are, and the first caller too, I mean, we should be clear that Leo is not across the board, quote unquote, progressive. I mean, he's still very much in line with Catholic teaching on abortion and, you know, women clergy, LGBTQ, same-sex marriage. So it's not really necessarily super across the board.
In other news, Deborah Witzberg is wrapping up her time as the city's inspector general, but not before issuing one last report citing 17 more police officers for PPP loan fraud. She's alleging that they scammed the federal government of COVID-era relief funds. And for more on that, you can head over to suntimes.com. Now, Talia, Witzberg also cited some airport workers in her report, right? What should we know about that?
Yeah, so the OIG's report also included details of an investigation into airport workers who apparently were drinking at bars near O'Hare while on the job and then returning to the airport to finish out their shifts. The report also detailed some other cases of on-the-clock drinking, including one instance in which the workers apparently went to a party while they were on duty, thrown by a colleague who was off duty, where they did shots and then went back to the airport to finish their jobs. On top of that, the OIG said that seven employees who were involved in the investigation made false statements to the OIG during the course of the investigation. So the OIG recommended that these subjects of the investigation, there were 14 in total, either be disciplined or discharged and barred from future city employment.
Barred. I see what you did there. See what you did there, Talia. You're already fitting right in here on the recap. Okay, so Witzberg is, she's stepping down from the job as IG. It's happening on the 24th of April. Now, she says that her work hasn't been welcomed by the Johnson administration, that they've been, quote, hostile to oversight from her office. I want to play a little bit of what Mayor Johnson had to say in response to this claim yesterday on In the Loop.
There's nothing in my administration where any corruption or impropriety took place while I was here. So I actually am concerned about how the outgoing inspector general has politicized this position. I don't want to bring up old news, but, you know, there's been a gift closet in the city of Chicago for 40 years.
Do you remember that gift controversy?
Oh, yeah. How could you forget?
What did we find in there again?
You know,
all kinds.
This was probably Witzberg's most public clash with Johnson because her audit detailed her office's repeated attempts to go in and investigate the gift room and also detailed Johnson's staff, you know, trying to hamper those efforts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you've been covering the Johnson administration closely, Mariah. What do you think? Has the mayor been hostile to the IG's oversight or has she overstepped her role?
I think it's hard. It would be hard to say Inspector General Deborah Witzberg overstepped her role. I mean, she has a lot of respect from the oversight community, from Chicago alderpersons. And, you know, the relationship between mayors and inspector generals is historically fraught. I mean,
It should be adversarial.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, mayors are going to be prickly and opposed to oversight of their offices, whether Johnson's been more so. I do think the gift room was a good example of that. You know, I think, again, on the analysis hat, you could look back at that and say maybe you shouldn't have, you know, tried to stop her office so many times because that's going to get detailed in an audit that's going to be made public and that's not going to look great. And you look at the relationship between Inspector General Joe Ferguson and Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who warned that his predecessor should stay or his successor should stay in their lane, quote unquote, you know.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. And Emanuel. Ferguson with Rahm Emanuel as well. I mean, this goes way back to, I'm not going to say how long because then I'm going to sound even older. But I mean, it's like to Mariah's point, it's hard to quantify really like what would be overstepping or going too far when it is your job to, you know, with oversight, as Talia just laid out of like, you know, city workers and with pensions and, you know, benefits that are drinking on the job, which in a, you know, in the private sector, most
of us. It's her job to call that out.
It's absolutely her job to call it. And she has extremely smart and dedicated inspectors who look into stuff like that. And that's really what we pay for as taxpayers. We want to make sure that that's happening.
Yeah. Right? It's our, as journalists, I always joke, it's our job to be annoying and pesky. And it is an inspector general's job to be nosy and probe and, you know, put her foot in the door.
And these are attorneys who investigate. I mean, you know, inspector generals, they know how to investigate, you know?
Well, you mentioned Rahm Emanuel a moment ago. I want to say that Johnson did have some strong words yesterday regarding the potential for the former mayor to run for president in 2028. An audience member asked him the question about, you know, who he would endorse, you know, if he's supporting anyone on the Democratic side. Johnson's been critical of Emanuel in the past, but this was different, wasn't it?
It was different because it was so specific about whether he would support Emanuel for a presidential run. And he flat out and directly said he is the one Democrat who is, you know, being talked about as a potential front runner in a Democratic primary that I would automatically, I think, X out.
And let's be clear, he was trying not to name the person. And I said, tell us who you're talking about.
This is true. And I'm glad you did that.
Say it with your chest, Mayor.
And I'm glad you did that. I don't think he ever named him personally. He said the former mayor of the city of Chicago. And we all
and then we all just knew.
And then, you know, referenced the closure of 50 schools, which Rahm Emanuel decided in 2013.
Laquan McDonald.
Right. But I do think the audience, and that was such an interesting part, I think the audience assumed that he was talking about Trump, even though we were talking about Democrats. But he was like, I think everyone knows the person I wouldn't support.
And that's why I was like, no, clarify.
And you're like, name him, which kudos to you. And then I think one of the audience members like gasped and they were like, oh, we're getting specific, like, for, you know, criticizing the former mayors. But Johnson, as you said, has taken sharp aim at Emanuel. It's no surprise.
Yeah. Over to you, Talia, because O'Hare Airport, there's possible talk here of an airline merger happening. What's going on?
Yeah, so it came out this week that United CEO Scott Kirby had apparently floated the idea of a merger with American Airlines in a meeting with President Trump earlier this year. It's not clear if there's an actual process underway, and this is considered a long, long, long shot by aviation experts and also antitrust experts. It's something that would invite a tremendous amount of antitrust scrutiny. You know, even under the Trump administration, which is more open to corporate consolidation. But if it did happen, it could have a massive impact on the industry and on travelers.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like people are pretty skeptical about whether this merger is actually going to happen. I saw at least a couple headlines like long shot question mark.
I laughed because most people would say there's no chance in hell this happening. And then earlier this week, I forget who said it. I think probably when one of our editorial meetings and some said, but aren't we in hell? So maybe it would. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that never is unprecedented happening, but this is not going to happen.
While you're in the hot seat, Carrie, head back down to Springfield with me, where the House and Senate have passed a bill that would limit certain fees for renters.
Yes, these are rental junk fees is what they're calling them. Obviously, you have property owners, landlords on one side who say, no, this is how, you know, they're not going to call them junk fees. These are fees that we're charging to renters to stay on top of maintenance needs, you know, infrastructure stuff for our buildings as costs go up. Mm-hmm. This is a big issue, especially now. This is always an issue. Talia and I were talking before about rent. I did a story earlier this week about, you know, there's like this rent. Now renters are facing like bidding wars. I talked to a renter who, you know, says that every time she goes to a showing, there's 20, 30 people in line because there is such demand for rent. And Chicago also has been continuing to rise as one of the top. You know, we're still not as expensive as New York and San Francisco.
Yeah. Or, but you've been reporting on people actually ending up in bidding wars.
Yeah, bidding
apartments.
Wars. Well, in the sense of that, you know, these applications now say, which back in my day never did, of like, you know, the rent is $19.95 and it's this is how much are you willing to pay? It used to be the rent was the rent, you know,
right.
And then you, of course, had to do a credit check and everything. And there are already all these fees on, you know, you have to a move-in fee that you don't get back, which is different than a security deposit that you used to get back. Mm. So the idea is to protect renters. This is part of a lot of talk of, you know, again, we go back to this issue of affordable housing. There is legislation right now addressing unhoused, you know, the rights for unhoused people in Springfield. So, you know, the junk fees or whatever is, again, meant to protect renters.
Okay, so Mariah, two members of the group known as the ComEd Four, remember them? I'm talking specifically today about ComEd CEO Anne Pramaggiore and lobbyist Michael McLean. They're getting new trials, and they actually walked out of prison on Wednesday, right? So just help us make sense of this.
Yes, each of these people were sentenced to 2 years in prison last summer in a plot to bribe Michael Madigan. And shortly before the four all involved in the ComEd Four trials could be sentenced, the Supreme Court picked up this corruption case from Northwest Indiana that revolved around the same bribery law that was used to prosecute the ComEd case. And so the court's decision in the Supreme Court's decision in that case to limit this bribery law kind of undermined that verdict and led to the dismissal of bribery counts in 2025, but convictions against them for conspiracy and falsifying books and records remain. And I'm really citing, reporting from federal courts reporter John Seidel at the Sun-Times on all of this. Still, this appeals court this week, ordered a new trial and ordered their release basically over concerns that the jury, even though this bribery law had been diminished by the Supreme Court, that the jury still reached a verdict essentially that was influenced by that bribery law. And so they were released on Wednesday.
How big of a blow is this, Carrie, for the federal prosecutors who won this case?
Oh, I don't know that. I mean, this, like, to be clear, this doesn't affect Madigan, who is obviously the central name in this, former House Speaker Mike Madigan, the most powerful politician in modern history in Illinois. So I'm not sure it's the blow. I mean, I don't know. And I don't know if for sure that the prosecutors are going to retry them. Are they? I mean, do we know for sure?
I don't know if it's confirmed yet. I don't know the technical process for granting a new trial,
John,
but I know the federal.
Madigan is also appealing his verdict.
Of course, yes.
I know the federal appeals court, ordered a new trial when releasing them, or said, we hope to see a new trial.
We knew they'd appeal. You know, that's pretty clear as soon as they're sentenced. Like, expect an appeal.
Absolutely. Especially, I mean, him. He did not want to sit in there.
No,
right. I'm getting older. Get me out. Sticking with the courts, Talia, you covered a Wisconsin sheriff's defamation lawsuit. This was against a Skokie woman and a Cook County commissioner. What's it about?
Yeah, so Sunny Nuckvi is a Skokie woman who made many, many headlines last month with this harrowing story of being, allegedly detained by federal immigration agents for almost 2 days after she flew into O'Hare from a work trip. The story from her supporters, including Cook County Commissioner Kevin Morrison, who's a family friend, was that she had been detained at O'Hare and then taken to Broadview and then also detained at a jail in Wisconsin. Law enforcement agencies came forward pretty quickly and started casting doubt on this story. DHS denied it, but so did the Dodge County Sheriff. The Cook County Sheriff's Office said they had searched Broadview for her, didn't find her, and her purported employer, the company for which she had allegedly been on this work trip, said she was never an employee.
Oh.
So now the Dodge County Sheriff is suing her and Kevin Morrison in his personal capacity, for defamation, saying that they had harmed him reputationally. And he had a press conference last week where he presented a slew of evidence that he said essentially made it impossible for Nuckvi to have been held. Hotel records, text messages.
Wow.
Essentially saying she was actually in a Rosemont hotel for a large part of the time she was allegedly being held. So now that lawsuit is in federal court in Wisconsin, and it'll be interesting to see what comes out of it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so many twists and turns in that one. Carrie, a jury yesterday found that Live Nation and Ticketmaster operated as an illegal monopoly. What do you think about how that could impact concert goers here in Illinois?
Well, we don't totally know yet. And so there was the DOJ had brought Live Nation and Ticketmaster. They had sued them previously in the Biden administration and then sort of out of nowhere settled. I think that was last month. And the judge was not happy. He said, there was kind of this insinuation you've been making backroom deals here. But states, including Illinois, dozens of states were like, no, we're still going to stick with our case. So this was a resolution of sorts in the state's case. We don't yet know. I believe that what came out in the trial was that probably Ticketmaster ticket buyers were charged almost like on average almost $2 more in fees. This is again back to like the United American Airlines. This is this monopoly idea. Live Nation owns a lot of venues and then would say, well, you have to use Ticketmaster as your ticket agency for this, and you have to use Live Nation to, allegedly, you have to, you know, use Live Nation for promotion, et cetera. And people have been complaining about ticket fees for years and years. This has been going on, but we don't yet know if that means there's going to be relief in sight for ticket buyers.
Correction on my end, this verdict was actually Wednesday, not yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah. No, Talia, a company whose food delivery robot smashed through the glass at a Westtown bus shelter last month, it's now running an apology ad at the same bus shelter. So remind us what happened in these two robot crashes.
Well, last month, within the span of a couple of days, two delivery robots rolled into city bus shelters and shattered them.
Okay. And so one was in what? Westtown and one was in Old Town.
Yeah.
And literally shattered them, glass everywhere. And so this Westtown bus shelter apology, it's got a, I don't know if anyone's seen it, it's a picture of a robot with a speech bubble. You've seen it, Carrie?
Yeah, it's great marketing on their part.
Yeah.
Very clever.
The speech bubble says, you know, I took breaking into the market too literally. I'm really sorry about the bus stop and the dramatic entrance. I promise to do better. What do you think, Mariah?
I think we must resist the personification of robots.
And tell me more about those feelings.
Really? Yeah, we do anthropomorphize them, don't we? We've made them really cute little.
Yeah. So I whenever I see that, I'm kind of like, no, I will not. It's just like viewing business, you know, using language to talk about businesses as if they're individuals, which we resist in journalism. You know, I'm kind of against, you know, making robots seem like cute little baby puppies. But no, it's great marketing, of course. And I think didn't the company that owns this robot say that they have fixed their sensors? So in addition to the little the marketing campaign, they've said
they
that
made some tweaks.
The sensor that, you know, in the robot that didn't allow it to catch the glass.
Yeah. What do you think, Talia and Carrie? I mean, it should all be forgiven, or no more robots. You're no longer delivery robots. You're not welcome here.
Well, I think it's interesting because these incidents really became a flashpoint for this ongoing debate, because the robots are operating under a pilot program. It's not guaranteed that they'll continue to stay here. And I think, you know, a lot of people have safety concerns. It also seems, and I think you were getting at this, Mariah, that a lot of the debate is kind of philosophical. It's about whether people should have to share the public way with robots.
The space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels, I mean, trying to remain objective because I have written about this, it feels a wee overblown in the sense that in a city like a dense city like Chicago, you are going to have to share the sidewalks. I understand that it feels like this, the robots are taking over. And Mariah makes a good point. This is a business. These are not little cute creatures with a soul like our dogs or kids, you know. So I get that.
My kid's not a creature.
Well, you know what I mean. It's just like, it seems, it's kind of surprising how strong the reaction is. But I think, like, going back, we're gonna start to see that more with the Waymo and everything that becomes sort of automatic, you know, autonomous, is we're going to start to feel like, well, wait, wasn't this a person's job? You know, but the reaction to them is so strong.
It really is. Petitions and all.
Yeah.
Carrie, you're going to tell us about two new things coming to Chicago tomorrow. One is for bargain hunters. The other is high end, but they each have a following.
Yes. So Sunday actually is the Pickwick Vintage Show. I think that's what you're referring to.
Yes.
From LA. From LA. And that's going to be at the Chicago Athletic Association. This is a pretty well-known, I'm a somewhat semi-professional vintage and thrift shopper.
Yes.
Mariah knows this.
Some of the best thrifting I've ever done in my life was done in Los Angeles.
Really? Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, totally.
Hands
yes.
down.
Yes. Yes.
Like, we cleaned up as a family.
Nice.
I've benefited from Carrie Shepherd hand-me-downs. That were vintage.
She's been through my
well,
closet.
Every time Carrie shows up here and I'm like, oh, great coat, great shirt. Aww. Oh, thrifted it.
Yeah. And this is, thrifting and vintage is a little different in the sense that this is going to be probably like more designer vintage stuff. So it's probably going to be a little higher end. But there are so many other places in Chicago where you can do affordable shopping. So that's Sunday. But then also you're talking about the hand in the eye.
Yeah, what is that?
The magic parlor that we've been waiting for at at the old Lowry's Steakhouse on
Michigan.
Michigan and Ontario. And it's this is like this huge new palace of magic. And it's like a dinner club, members, etc. We've been waiting for this, and tickets are finally on sale for it. They are start at like $225 per person.
Ooh, okay.
But the idea is that you get dinner, you get drinks, it's this whole evening. My husband likes magic.
Yes.
Kind of but he was
there's
like,
nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. But
was he one of those kids that was like constantly doing card tricks?
No, he's just he's just funny. So I was like, maybe I'll get this for him for his birthday, but you know, that's a pretty penny to drop. So we'll see. But you know, you can't. I haven't been inside yet because the reporters weren't really they had exclusives with the Trib and the New York Times. But you can't take photos and videos when you're inside, which makes sense. You know, yeah.
I'm gonna keep following this. Maybe I'll do something for what's that building or something?
Totally.
One of our regular architecture.
Why don't we go?
Segments.
Why don't we go?
I'll invite you.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Before I let you all go, I do like to ask, what stories are you watching next week? What's on your radar, Mariah? What's not on your radar, Mariah? Let me start there.
Well, I actually want to highlight a story that came out today, because that's what I was prepared to do.
Go right ahead.
Instead of thinking about next week, but it's by Lauren Fitzpatrick and Nader Issa at the Sun Times, and it looks at the costs that Broadview, the small town of Broadview, where the ice processing facility that was turned into a detention center and the site of very heightened protest was, what that town had to pay for, all of the costs associated with kind of being thrust into the national spotlight. That story just came out today.
Awesome.
Give it a read on the Sun Times.
Nice. SunTimes.com. And Talia, what's on your radar?
Well, United and American both have earnings calls coming up, so it will be very interesting to see if they discuss anything about this alleged mega merger.
Merge or not to mega merge.
Indeed.
Carrie.
A lot of the legislation we've already talked about, Waymo, but also the cell phone ban bill. And I'm trying to dig in and take a little closer look at what's going to happen to the collection at the DePaul Art Museum that is supposed be closing this summer. And higher ed sort of changes in general. Loyola's killing a couple, majors. There's just been, a lot of changes in higher ed and kind of what's happening there.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guthman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/InTheLoop. Thanks for listening.